Why do most of us, including me, find sharing the gospel so difficult most of the time? Even if we are one of the talkative and social types, which I'm not, as soon as it comes to talking about spiritual matters, hearts pound, start to get cold sweat, and the words seem to get stuck in our throats. Why is that? Is it because all of us fear the possibility of ridicule and rejection? After all, our spirituality is something that strikes at the root of our being. Doesn't it, to a large degree, form the basis of our identities? And if someone ridicules or rejects what we value, don't we take it as a personal rejection, a rejection of ourselves? At least, it feels that way. Doesn't it feel like we're less valued? So most of us do what might be called witnessing by example. We just live our lives the best we can and hope that someone who sees us will become interested in God. But we kind of hope that they'll never ask us. But what if that someone is just as fearful about taking the initiative in asking about and exploring spiritual matters as we are and sharing them? The bad news is that if we do dare to share the gospel, it's pretty much guaranteed that it will be rejected many times. Even if it were possible to use the perfect methods, have all the right words, and have the perfect insight into the listener so that we could custom tailor our approach and message, we would still experience rejection. The good news is that Jesus was that perfect example, that perfect evangelist. And guess what? He too experienced rejection. And to a much larger degree than probably any of us will ever likely face. When we experience rejection, Jesus already knows what that's like. If the gospel is such good news, then why would anyone want to reject it? It's because I believe the gospel of grace can be offensive. It's because Jesus can be offensive. John 6, verses 60 through 71, relates the incident of a mass rejection of Jesus and his message. This comes right after the feeding of the 5,000 of the discourse where Jesus identifies himself as the true bread from heaven, the bread of life. This incident takes place about a year prior to his crucifixion, where the final rejection comes. Up to this point, for 2.5 years, the Jesus movement was growing and gaining. Jesus was the most popular person and the event in the whole country. Jesus could have chosen to live a life that people expected from him and continue that popularity and acclaim. But rather, he chose to speak out and direct the people's minds to the greater spiritual realities. And today's passage in John chapter 6 tells us the result of that. Jesus had just finished saying that he was the bread of life and that people must eat this bread and chew it in order to have life. Most of the crowd that had been around Jesus and the Jewish leaders, apparently offended, had left after that. Because for the rest of chapter 6, Jesus is addressing just his disciples. This includes the 12, but more than that, it includes all those who had claimed to follow him. Let's look at verses 60 through 71. What we find here is a form of parallelism. The first half of verses 60 through 71, from verses 60 through 64, are kind of paralleled in verses 65 through 71. As we go along, I'll try to point that out. So beginning with verse 60, when many of his disciples heard it, they said, "This is a hard saying. Who can listen to it? Who can understand what Jesus is saying? But more than that, who can accept what Jesus is saying?" Even if they understood it, they found it hard to accept. Now this word saying is the Greek logos, what John in chapter 1 of his gospel attributes to Jesus. The word, this is a hard, the hard, can also be taken as difficult or offensive. And listen can also be understood as swallowing or digesting. Now it's interesting, because a couple weeks ago we talked about, you know, how you have to come, and then you have to take, eat, chew. Now the people here are having trouble swallowing and digesting. No, they don't. They've taken it in their mouths. They've taken the words, but they find it hard. Verse 61. But Jesus, knowing in himself that his disciples were grumbling about this, said to them, "Do you take offense at this? Then what if you were to see the Son of Man ascending to where he was before?" This word offense comes from the Greek skandalizo, which means to stumble. Now, is what Jesus is saying causing people to stumble? He's asking, do you take issue with the cost of accepting my teachings? Because what these people were realizing all of a sudden is that what Jesus is teaching is not about a kingdom on earth. It's a kingdom in their hearts. That they're not going to have the Romans. No, that Jesus isn't going to have the Romans go away. That they're going to have to live with the Romans. And Jesus is asking, if you're having trouble simply accepting those, then what happens when you see the Son of Man, when you see him ascending to where he was before? When John talks of the ascension, he often includes both the crucifixion and the resurrection together. So Jesus is asking, when you see the crucifixion, when you see me crucified, when it looks like truly all hope is gone, now, will you be able to accept that as well? Now, maybe the question here is grace offensive? Verse 63, it is the Spirit who gives life. The flesh is of no avail. The words I have spoken to you are spirit and life. One commentary states that this is probably the summary, the concise summary of this entire chapter 6. It's the Spirit who gives life. There's nothing a person can do to gain eternal life. Now, even if a person were to literally eat and drink Jesus' body and blood, it wouldn't do any good. Because it's not in the flesh. It's not in the physical blood. It's in the spiritual. And this spiritual understanding comes by taking in Jesus' words. Well, 1 Corinthians 15:45 alludes to the fact that Jesus is the life-giving Spirit. 1 Corinthians chapter 2 talks about where Paul discusses that as long as we try to understand Jesus' words with our earthly, fleshly understanding, we're never going to do it. That we need guiding by the Spirit. Life is found in God's words. But, verse 64, there are some of you who do not believe. Seems to be the key to real life. The key to eternal life is believing. These disciples that Jesus is talking to had all the same information, had all the same knowledge. But some believed, some did not. Those who believed may not have understood perfectly, but at least they understood. Those who did not believe, they were offended. Verse 64 continues, "For Jesus knew from the beginning who those were who did not believe and who it was who would betray him." Jesus knows all of our hearts, knew all of the hearts of everyone who claimed to follow him. You know, he could have easily said, "You know, you're going to turn away from me, so I don't want you following." But he never did that. He never refused his offer of grace. He let the people choose when they've had enough. He let the people turn away. Verse 65, "And he," Jesus, "said, this is why I told you that no one can come to me unless it's granted him by the Father." This parallels verse 60. Now, it's about understanding and accepting. Verse 60 is about disciples who were unable to do so. You know, and the question, who can listen to it? There may have been another implied question there. How can one listen to what Jesus says? And Jesus answers that question in verse 65. You know, it's through God's grace. You have to be open to God's grace. Even faith is a gift of grace from God. In verse 66, "After this, many of his disciples turned back and no longer walked with him. So Jesus said to the 12, do you want to go away as well?" Verse 61, where the parallel is, when Jesus asks the question, "Do you take offense at this?" Verse 66 has the answer. Many of his disciples walked away. They did take offense. They walked away. They turned back to their past lives. They turned back to, you know, what... to look for another Messiah, really. One that would meet their expectations. And Jesus' humanity shines through in verse 67. He asks, "Do you want to go away as well?" I sense disappointment. I sense sadness. I sense loneliness in that question. No. He sees perhaps hundreds of these that had accompanied Jesus for a couple years now walk away. And now he's surrounded by what appears to be, you know, just the 12. Maybe there were more. We don't know. The Bible doesn't say, but the 12 were there still. And he's giving them a choice. No. Here they are, these people that have claimed to follow me. They're going away. Think hard about what you're going to do. Are you going to stick with me? Or do you want to go away? And good old Peter, Simon Peter, speaking for the group, answered Jesus, "Lord, to whom shall we go? You have the words of eternal life." Eternal life comes from Jesus' words. The parallel for verse 68 is found in verse 63, where Jesus says, it's the Spirit who gives life. The words are spirit and life. My words are spirit and life. And here Peter is acknowledging, "Yes, Jesus, yes, Lord, your words are eternal life." Now, we know the rest of the story. Peter's faith was very weak. He had strong words. He had big words, but his faith was very weak. He's still very immature. But despite it, Peter spoke up. And this is, you know, I'm just speculating, but I wonder if his speaking up didn't have a positive effect on the faith of the others with him. Maybe there were some like, you know, Thomas, maybe Philip, that were considering leaving. Again, I'm speculating here. And it's when Peter spoke up that maybe some of them said, you know, Peter's right. Where else can we go? Maybe it's important that when we're prompted to speak up for Jesus, that we do so, because it may be for some other person around us whose faith is wavering. Verse 69, Peter continues, "And we have believed and have come to know that you are the Holy One of God." Here we get to the core issue of belief. When Jesus noted back in verse 64 that, "No, there are some of you who do not believe." Verse 69, which is the parallel, Peter is affirming that, "But we do believe." We have come to know. They've seen the evidence. And they've placed their trust in Jesus. Evidence and trust. Together, I believe, makes up faith. And then finally, verses 70 and 71. Jesus answered them, "Did I not choose you, the 12, and yet one of you is a devil?" He spoke of Judas, the son of Simon Iscariot, for he, one of the 12, was going to betray him. Now the word devil is diabolos in Greek, meaning slanderer, one who falsely accuses. Jesus knew all about Judas before he even called Judas to be part of the 12. Yet Jesus chose. And when Judas chose to stay, Jesus didn't make him go away. Seems offensive, perhaps. Now, why would a captain place someone who's going to deliberately sink the boat onto his crew? But that's essentially what he's doing here. That's how God's grace works. Grace is offensive because it goes against human nature. Jesus is offensive because he showed that living by grace is possible. When people are confronted by the truth that there is nothing they can do for themselves to secure eternal life, do they accept it or do they take offense at it? Tithing won't get them life. Strict church attendance won't get them life either. Volunteering for church work won't. Neither will obeying every commandment perfectly. This is the stumbling block, the offense for legalists. On the other hand, when people are confronted by the truth that having accepted God's grace, they're going to have to make some changes in their lives to look more like Jesus. Do they accept that, or do they take offense at it? Is there any contradiction between works having nothing to do with receiving grace and salvation, and works having everything to do with accepted grace? Is this what the book of James discusses? This is perhaps a stumbling block for antinomians and libertarians, those who say the law and obedience are completely irrelevant to grace. It's something for you to chew on this coming week. When people are confronted by the truth that God is offering the same grace to, you know, the same grace to conservative and liberal Adventists, Baptists, Presbyterians, Lutherans, Catholics, Mormons, Jehovah's Witnesses, Muslims, including the ultra-radical ones, Hindus and Buddhists, members of Al-Qaeda and other terrorists, their ex-husband or ex-wife, the people that swindled their life savings, the parent, family member, or acquaintance that abused them or their children, or the people that tortured and murdered their child. Do they accept the offered grace, realizing that they are no more deserving of it than those that the world might consider worse? Or do they cry out, "Unfair," and choose to take offense at God and reject His grace? Jesus knew what was going in the hearts of every person that followed Him, including Judas, but He didn't refuse the offer of grace to any of them. Unfair? Perhaps. But grace is not fair in the way we think of fair. From a human perspective, what the Bible calls the flesh, grace is offensive, and Jesus is too. That's because in the human way of thinking, there is a hierarchy of evil. There is a hierarchy of deservedness. But Jesus tells us that as far as coming to Him and finding eternal life is concerned, we're all in the same boat. Grace is infinite, because it is part of God's nature. Jesus exemplified this grace because He is God. While we may be content to live a quiet life and keep our spirituality within our hearts, there comes a time when we may be called to be God's tools to more explicitly bring God's message of grace to someone. We may be asked to speak words that may be difficult for the listener to accept. But like in all things, Jesus has led the way and has left us a path to follow. Like Jesus, when we are called by God to be His spokesperson, our concern is not what the listener is going to think of us. The rejection of what we say is not a rejection of us, but a rejection of God and His grace. And maybe ultimately it won't be a rejection. Maybe they're not ready to fully commit. Maybe we're just a link in a big chain that will eventually lead them to accept Jesus. Jesus knew the results of speaking some difficult things, but He went ahead anyway. When we are called to speak, we don't know what the results may be. Who knows? Contrary to our worst fears, the listener could choose to accept Jesus, and we could find ourselves a friend for eternity.